And welcome to episode 57 of I'm Trying to Think. I'm Chuck Werner. With me, as always, is Dave Stearns. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hello. I'm Trying to Think is a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. You can find them on the web at foundation-institute.org. You can find us on the web at imtryingtothink.com or facebook.com/imtryingtothink or twitter.com/imtryingtothink. And here comes the good part, Dave. So, Dave, yeah, the reason I really like that part there is that you got the, you know, you're doing some good rock and roll music, right? When you get to like the refrain or a bridge, maybe, and you can just like beat the hell out of the bass drum in a very steady, slow rhythm while the front man is just rocking out. You know what I mean? Because the drummer's just going boom, 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 and you know that's good.
Yeah, the thing that strikes me about that song is this is something I've always thought about, you know, definitely the sweet song most people know, you know, Ballroom Blitz.
Yeah.
And it's definitely true about that song is, to me, every sweet song sounds a lot like three songs that are the same song for some reason. Like, same way where Ballroom Blitz, it's like the verses in Ballroom Blitz are this kind of, you know, normal sounding, like, you know, basically it's a T-Rex song and then the chorus is like a crazy person song.
Yeah.
And they're not quite the same songs. Like, that song sounds like a techno song, a rock song, and then the chorus is an ELO song.
Like, yeah, like it does. That does. Like it really does strike ELO in my brain. Like, it's hard to remember that that is Sweet and not ELO, because it's, yeah.
They're a band that had a lot of ideas and, like, putting them in the same song and didn't really care if they belong there.
Yeah, and
which
that
I
is,
kind of respect in some ways.
That is Fox on the Run by Sweet. 1974, Dave. Which, I mean, just really shows you how far hard rock and glam had come by, you know, 74. You don't have to wait till, like, the late 70s. You're getting it right up front.
Yep.
And, I mean, we're out of the incense and peppermints nonsense, you know? We're in some real, like, the post-psychedelic into glam. You're getting some real good stuff.
It's Queen before Queen.
Queen before Queen.
There
you
go.
In a lot of ways. They hadn't been corrupted completely by disco yet. That's what happened. Queen is great, but definitely corrupted by disco.
I don't know. Their disco stuff's pretty good, too.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Corrupted by disco. Man, I'm looking at a picture of Sweet. If you want to see a picture, Dave, look at the picture of Sweet on Wikipedia. Because that is a band. They've got, like, unicolor jumpsuits on, you know? So, like, one guy's in a red jumpsuit that looks like vinyl or leather, right? One guy's in a yellow one. One guy's in a purple one. And they all have, like, platform boots on. Oh, that is solid. That's how I should dress.
They don't make them like that anymore.
If I weighed, 70 less pounds. Nah, let's be honest, 90 less pounds. That I could dress like that. I would have to be a skinny motherfucker. And I am not that. I'm broad.
Yeah, there's that, and then there's also the fact that, I mean, skinny motherfuckers still don't necessarily look good in vinyl jumpsuits.
It's true. These guys do, though. They're pulling it off. They got the big hair. Well, not big hair, but it's long and, you know, flowy 70s hair. Some wave to it. Anyways, Dave,
yeah.
You have a topic because we had to cut the last episode, you know, short for our new time.
Because we're on a vicious schedule.
Vicious schedule. And so you had a topic, so you want to continue it. But before we continue on your very serious topic,
sure,
let's discuss a very, very serious topic.
Okay. Got to start it heavy, then lighten it up a little, it's still heavy.
Okay, if I may. Charles in charge of our days and our nights. Charles in charge of our wrongs and our rights. Okay, Now the next part, and I see I want Charles in charge of me. But let's break this down. Okay. Charles in charge of our days and our nights. Understandable, right? He's there all the time.
Yeah,
And he is the authority figure.
He's a live-in guy, right?
He's the authority figure.
I don't really remember the show that well, but he's a live-in gentleman.
He's like a live-in babysitter or something. And he is the authority figure to which we appeal.
Right.
Right? That's understandable. Now, here is my big question, and this is very on topic for us.
Charles in charge. Yeah, I see this flowing really smoothly in
our
main
wrongs
topic.
And our rights. Now, is an authority figure, like a parent or a guardian, can they be held truly responsible for the wrong and right actions, the moral perpitude? I don't know if that's the appropriate use of that word. I think I use that word out of, illogically, but
Is perpitude even a word? Let's take it back a step. Are you getting the word
turpitude
and perpetuity combined in a way that I don't understand?
Yeah, it's probably, I just made that up. Anyways, moral turpitude is the word I meant. I said perpetuity. Isn't that what the same mistake that Sarah Palin made?
I'm not sure.
Is it possible
I think perpetuity is what rappers drink.
Okay. If,
also known as the Szerp.
Is it possible that
perpetuity.
I made the same mistake Sarah Palin made because, Sarah Palin made it? Or did I make a different mistake? I don't know. It's too hard to look up right now. I'm too busy thinking about other things.
Let's keep going.
Regardless, turpitude. And actually, I don't really think I know what moral turpitude means either. Because it's just a throwaway term. It's not actually... You know, I've studied applied ethics a lot, and
yeah, moral turpitude is not a term of art. It's a nonsense term.
Anyways. So, regardless, let's get back to Charles in charge.
Yeah.
Can he be
let's
held
responsible?
Let's
get off of these ridiculous tangents and come back to what
Can
matters.
Can he be held
Charles
responsible for the moral, you know, value of the actions undertaken by his wards? Dave.
Completely, no. Partially, yes.
Very good, Dave. I agree with you. Let's see if I can guess where you're going to expand here, but it would be basically that while he is not responsible for their actions, to a degree, as a guardian, he must work to prevent what he can, as far as, moral wrongs and moral rights. He would want to encourage the rights and discourage the wrongs. However, each person being a decision-making machine unto themselves... By our accounting, which we'll get into if that's true or not.
Certainly.
You can't be held responsible for all of the wrongs and the rights. Now, the consequences thereof, you could certainly put a person in charge of that, but truly, they can only do so much from that position. You know, you can't undo when Charles is babysitting little boy guy.
Children,
or
whatever.
What was his buddy named Boner? Was that the Boner?
No.
Boner's in Growing
different
Pains.
Show. Yes,
is that
Growing Pains?
Yeah,
yeah,
Boner's from Growing Pains. What was the sidekick in Charles in Charge?
I don't know.
You're terrible, Dave.
The theme song, which we've already been over, is the limit of my Charles in Charge.
I also know
knowledge.
That like a large amount of the cast changed. I think at some point, which is really disturbing to me. But the show was on, okay, let's do some Charles in Charge factoids just real fast before we get into the actual serious topics.
Sure.
So, Scott Baio is Charles, a 19-year-old student at the fictional Copeland College in New Jersey. This is from Wikipedia, which is now not blacked out anymore, thank goodness.
Working
as a live-in babysitter in exchange for room and board. Okay? Here's a kicker, Dave. Baio directed many of the episodes. Oh, who knew? So, Buddy was his sidekick.
His buddy?
Yeah. So...
That must have taken him, at least a minute to come up with.
So, yeah, and the cast from 84 to 85 were the Pierces, or one person named Pierce, but then the Pembrokes, I guess. And then the next 3 years, he's babysitting the Powells. How does that work? Did they move out? I don't know. I'm sure there's a story behind that. But
he stays
really...
in. He comes with the house.
He comes to the house. It's somewhat mind-blowing.
He's a value add. He's like a marble, like what marble kitchens are now, sort of live-in college student babysitters were in the mid-80s.
Well, regardless.
If you wanted to move your house, you got a Charles in charge installed.
John Travolta's sister was Charles's mother in the show. How about that?
That is a fact in the world. I shan't deny it.
And here's a kicker for you. She played Chachi Arcola's mother in Happy Days.
What?
Yeah, so his mother was played by the same actress, two different mothers, two different characters, same actress, two different shows. Mind-blowing, Dave. All right, morality.
Okay.
Charles can't be held responsible for your wrongs and your rights. He can be held responsible for consequences, perhaps, or what might have caused you to go astray, but...
Yeah, he can certainly be held responsible for his failings as a moral teacher.
Right. And his, or as a moral, what do you want to say, icon or...
Exemplar.
Exemplar, right. So,
segueing into our main topic for today.
Main topic. Plinko.
If we are in, kind of a materialist, a universe that obeys laws, then perhaps not only, can Charles not be in charge of our wrongs and our rights, but can anyone be in charge of any wrongs and rights? Or is everything just stuff that happens?
Well, and as I pointed out this out last week, it's nonsense, which I'll get into that a little bit later.
Please
do. First, let's talk about this as if I accept some of your premises.
Sure.
So, if stuff just happens, then as you pointed out in the last episode, punishment also just happens. For some reason, we want to punish people, regardless of whether or not they have control of their actions. So we do. And everybody's pretty pleased with that. So what's the problem? But yeah, I think we both took applied ethics courses during
Indeed.
Our time at CMU, which is a whole thing there. There's a center for applied ethics. And, talked a lot about morality and all that kind of bullshit. Never once during all my ethics courses did someone point out that... even if people are not responsible for their actions because of some deterministic, factor, neither are we responsible for, neither is it bad to punish them because we also have the, need to punish or the drive to punish and correct as a similarly determinist factor. So zero sum. Your argument holds no water because I can come at it with a completely silly counter-argument that is equally as silly as your argument. Like if I hit you in the face and I say, everything in my existence has culminated at this point, there's nothing I could do about it. You can hit me back and say, yep, and everything in my existence culminated in me doing that. Whoops, neither of us is responsible, so let's go have a beer.
Well, here's the thing that I think about that, and I'm not going to say that what I'm saying isn't nonsense necessarily.
Right.
But I think it might be correct, if not you. It met, like, the whole thing about, in a deterministic world, does, free will, does morality and punishment make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
I think the answer might be, ultimately, is it doesn't, but that doesn't practically matter. But, for example, in the thing you just said, it's, you punch me in the face... That's just because that's a thing you did, because, a series of, electrical connections, matter in the universe caused that to happen. Then likewise, I punched you back, same thing, pain response, electrical connections firing, molecules moving, atoms shifting through the air, eventually put my fist in your face.
Yeah. Then weak and strong nuclear forces cause atoms not to, molecules, solids not to enter, not to pass through one another and thus
Indeed.
Collision.
And then the next part, you said, and then we could get a beer after, and that's silly, either we do or we don't.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
but
it's all just stuff happening.
Let me,
which is, from that macro level of the universe, that doesn't seem wrong to me, but then when you go kind of on the level in which we experience and live in the world, that seems crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the problem that people have with determinism. It's there is a gut response to it that if you, it's kind of this. It's just like an existential angst moment where, you know, existential angst moment is where you, it's a crisis where you you realize that there's no meaning to life, right? Okay, you can similarly have sort of a determinist crisis where you start to think, whoa. There's no reason to believe that there is anything like free will. Oh my God, that's terrible. But why is it terrible? My gut response is that that's terrible.
Exactly. And then there's the worst, I think my favorite kind of determinism free will crisis like that is the people who, like I think I, like I said last time, and like I've, you know, even been sort of saying or hinting at earlier, you know, in this conversation, the people who, you know, have that crisis of, you know, oh my God, you know, in a determined universe, you know, is there no free will, you know, therefore I should change, like, a lot of people sort of interpret, like, there's this weird phenomenon, I would say, when people have, you know, some sort of, you know, philosophical crisis, then it's like, then why do anything? Or, yeah. You know, then I give up, you know, then... But if you have – having that response to a free will crisis seems kind of hilarious to me in a certain way.
Yeah, there's an irony.
If there's – if your problem is that there's no free will and your response to that is to do something, that's kind of self-negating in a weird way.
All right. I got 3 points. Ready?
Hit me.
Point number one, don't listen to your gut. Your gut will have all sorts of reactions that don't make any sense and aren't right. Example, my cousin was just saying that he was, out to eat with his wife, who has 2 children and breastfed both of them, and he saw a lady breastfeeding at the restaurant, and he did not like that. Like, he thought that was, I'm not gonna say he thought that was wrong in any moral sense, but he thought
it was ooky. He was ooked.
Yeah, he was ooked. I mean, he thought it was rude in some sort of way, right? Obviously, you know, Dave, you and I both know we had better be pro breastfeeding in public, or there are at least, you know, 3 or 4 of our friends who will come at us with hatchets. Yeah, but moreover,
baby's got to eat, faces got to not have hatchets in them.
Moreover, if I actually think about it, I realize, honestly, when I see someone breastfeeding in public, I feel uncomfortable. That's the truth. Like, I'm like Juan Williams when I see it. Well, I'm not like Juan Williams, but Juan Williams said, you know, when he saw an Arab at the airport, he got nervous, and that was just a gut response. And he was making the point that it was stupid, but it was nonetheless his response. Similarly,
I see someone, you're like Juan Williams in that Newt Gingrich has some very stern things to say about you, which will catapult him to victory.
Actually, that I'm going to digress.
I think I just did something that nobody does, which is almost get South Carolina mixed up with Southern California.
That would be weird. Yeah, no one does that.
Different places.
No one does that. Anyways. So, if I could digress.
You can.
When Newt Gingrich, you know, puts down Juan Williams in really a dismissive way that you should not treat any other human being. But regardless, he's Newt Gingrich, so that he's
used to
that.
It's his political strength.
I mean,
it's just being horrible and condescending.
Not just being a horrible person in general. Asking your wife for a divorce when she has cancer, then asking your next wife for a divorce when she has multiple, she's been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Good job.
Love him and leave him diseased. I don't remember which one. It's the Gingrich way.
Anyways, then a lady on the campaign trail says to him, you know, I liked it when you put Juan Williams in his place. Am I wrong that there's kind of a racial undertone to that term, to that phrase?
Basically, if you're talking about the Gingrich victory in South Carolina, in which his shining moment, which he then made into an advertisement, was calling Barack Obama a food stamp president.
Yeah, I mean,
I think
there's
the only
that
thing that's wrong in what you're seeing is calling them undertones.
It's just that when she
their
said
tones.
That, when she said
their racist tones,
I don't remember exactly how she phrased the first part, but she said, "When you put him in his place," a chill went up my spine. I felt like when one of my older relatives tells a racist joke, you know, that kind of thing, where it's like, that would be funny if it came from one of my hipster friends who's being ironic, but you're not being ironic. You know, it's that chill up your spine thing. Anyway,
yeah, yeah. I remember. I think the last time I had that was. When I got that joke, and it turns out it was just, like, you know, ironic, whatever kind of thing. But it was the problem, like, when you're deploying that kind of humor, like, there are certain rules,
yeah.
I think. Like, for example, it has to be someone you know.
Yeah, you got, like, you can only do that in a tight circle.
Racial humor. You can do the high-end stuff if you're joking.
You can do, like, the high-end
stuff, If it's real obvious, it's bullshit.
You could do, like, stuff that a comedian might do on The Tonight Show. Well, not The Tonight Show. That show's terrible. But, you know, like, that a comedian might do on a nationally televised show, where it's loosey-goosey. Like, not a, a hard-edged comedian, but, you know, just kind of a, ha-ha. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't have a good example. But regardless, you can kind of get it. But you gotta, you can't, you have to know the people. Yeah, you gotta know the people. It's gotta be, like, a tight, you gotta be at, like, a secret society meeting. You know what I mean? Anyways. So, digress, digress, digress. Point one. I don't really remember anymore, but.
That's the problem with these digressions sometimes.
So, I'm usually good at that, at the regressing.
Egrets.
I'm really good with egrets. Like, I pet them, and I, you know.
You feed them fish.
I help them. I clean their little feathers and whatnot. I guess they're not little. They're pretty big birds, but regardless. I digress, okay? Juan Williams. So, he's seeing a woman breastfeed in public. Makes me uncomfortable. It's a gut reaction, right? But my brain is smart enough to say, there is no basis for your reaction. Your reaction is selfish. It's something you feel that has no bearing on any facts or realities or reason or rationality. It's just, ooh, you feel oogie, exactly. And then I can, you know, say to myself, no, that's a very selfish response. You know, the selfless response is, she's not trying, the lady's not trying to offend me. She's trying to feed her child, and that is, you know, a wonderful,
it's a pretty pro-social goal.
Yeah, it's a very social goal, and if her child is breastfed, she'll probably end up healthier. The mother will probably end up healthier. And that's good for everybody. Healthy people is good for everybody. The center of my moral philosophy is the idea of community, and that's part of it. So, you know, it's easy to put it out of mind. So your gut is stupid. So ignore your gut. That's point one. Point two. Let's see if I can even remember.
Good luck.
What point two and three were. Point two. Yeah, I can do point two.
All right.
Point two is that, this is actually point three. I'm going to move to point two while I try to remember point three. Point two, which is point three, actually, is...
Man, that was the least necessary and most confusing...
You're terrible.
...clarification
hey,
that ever did happen.
What's the title of the show?
I'm trying to confuse you by relabeling a bunch of things arbitrarily when I could have just kept going and making
my points.
So
point two, which used to be point three, is that it's all nonsense anyways, because the essential question is, how would you separate a... My question is always, how would you separate a deterministic universe from one where free will exists? What would they look like? What would the difference be that you would be able to tell?
That is the key, because... The issue of determinism,
even more
pretty
so,
much always is.
Tell me that... a magic power that you could have that would let you determine the difference between a universe that, where there's free will and a universe where there's determinism.
Yep, that is the key. I think that is why there's this difference from this top level, right, and then the functional perspective. Because the top level is, you know, the universe could, like, if the universe worked that way, what are the consequences?
Yeah.
But we don't know, and we can't tell, you know. None of us is Laplace's demon.
And I think even Laplace's demon would be slightly confused. Because Laplace's demon...
Who's pulling the strings
exactly
on Laplace's demon?
He has to have the question eventually, like, oh, I can see the universe. That guy's not making a decision based on free will. He's making a decision based on this and this and this and this and this. And then he has to ask himself still, wait, could he have still overcome all that and made a different decision?
Well, he doesn't have to ask himself that, because he knows the exact, you know, whatever fundamental forces.
No, he, well,
that make him him.
That might be a
and
different
make his stuff. Do his stuff.
That might be a different demon, because Laplace's demon, to me, knows where everything is and everything that has preceded that point and everything that is posted that point. And he might be able to stare into the quantum reality and everything else. But
actually, wait, quick digression, because okay, you just said the magic word, and I just want to make this point. Like, I am not a physics expert, so if I'm just dead wrong on this, you can, you know, try and correct me.
Yeah.
But one thing that I feel that bothers me about sort of compatibilism,
mm-hmm.
and, like, I don't think compatibilism is necessarily wrong, but I think this is a lame way to do it, is basically, I would say, in sort of when materialism wasn't sort of the most common philosophical thing, the sort of escape hatch for a lot of free will stuff was just, oh, but God lets us have it. Like,
yeah,
so that, but
so you think that people are using quantum physics as that out now?
I think to a certain extent, when people get uncomfortable with the implications of sort of a physical, materialist, mechanical universe, they use quantum physics as that escape hatch. But my main beef is, you know, sometimes that might be valid. I think a lot of the people who use it that way aren't using it that way because they know anything about it. They're using it because, okay, I know quantum physics is a thing, and it has the word uncertainty in it.
If somebody says,
therefore,
yeah.
free will. And
if
that,
somebody
that's
says
that's
that
bull.
The key to free will lies in quantum physics, they just don't understand quantum physics. Predictions of mathematical equations in quantum physics, when observed, are incredibly accurate, meaning we can figure out where everything is supposed to be. Somebody, and I don't remember if it was, I don't remember who it was, but some physicist said that the accuracy of quantum physics is like measuring the distance between Los Angeles and New York, or, you know, this is paraphrased, these might not even be the right cities, but regardless, and being correct to the width of a human hair. It's incredibly accurate. So, I mean, I'm not saying that all predictions of quantum physics are incredibly accurate, and I'm not saying that other fields where there's a lot of curiosity or uncertainty that are obviously tied to quantum physics, I'm not saying that those aren't without their continuing mysteries, of, you know, from zero-point energy to, you know, dark matter or whatever. I mean, we don't, there's so much stuff we don't know, but it's a complete out to say, to blame it on something we don't understand. And those people are generally just dipping in their toe into a giant lake,
yeah, so
and saying,
like pop science.
Oh, this part's cold.
It's like Deepak Chopra science.
Yeah, Deepak Chopra science. Yeah, it's bullshit. I like Deepak Chopra. I hate that he argues with scientists because he's an intelligent person who has a very a strong message. And I really liked listening to him talk and stuff. And then I saw him fighting with people like Richard Dawkins and overextending himself from going to a place where he's kind of philosophizing about the idea of self and, you know, community and other people and the universe and everything else and our place in it, which is fine. You can, you know, we can make up whatever we want about that and talk about it in metaphor, and that's great. But then he tries to actually justify it with pseudoscience, and that's awful. Just don't. You don't have to justify it. Doesn't have to be scientific. You can just say, look, this isn't about science. It's about a metaphor. Metaphors are still strong. We love metaphors. Anyways. So two, it's nonsense. Because there's no... Even Laplace's demon has to basically say, wait. Am I... You know, did I make up my own mind to do this? Why am I watching all these people? I don't know.
I always assume Laplace's demon was like a pervert.
It kind of... And say, am I changing things by observing them? What if I'm making these choices? And then Laplace's demon has a crisis. And he goes and has a beer. And then the third point, which would have been the second point, I don't remember what it was. Oh, well, that's all right. You talk some more, I'll probably remember it.
Okay, sure. Well, I will say we are coming up on a half hour. We never had a half hour solid show. No. And we're not going to start now. But one thing I want to spin from this is getting into what I think might be one of our next topics, because mm-hmm. it's something I've been thinking about expanding from this, is I think that with the way that, you know, these questions happen, because one thing it seems like I'm curious about is these kinds of things, you know, this discussion of, you know, free will without, you know, God, or free will in a deterministic universe, or, you know, or likewise, you said, you know, it's sort of an existential crisis. Basically, mm-hmm. it seems like they make a lot of crises happen.
Yeah, so, they do, for no good reason. And let me tell you why.
Do you think that's because society is sort of based kind of off of the existing idea? It's just anything that disrupts that is a crisis generator?
So, here's the let me first explain the problem, and this might have been point two. I don't really remember, but that is that even compatibilism to me is useless. So when I was talking about, oh, you can't know, if how would you tell the difference between a deterministic universe and one with free will?
Well, wait, hold on. One thing, while you're talking about compatibilism, I just want to make my brief point. Like, I think I made this sort of snidely in passing last show, so I just want to expand on it a bit. I think my sort of main point with compatibilism is the solution for most compatibilists, or, you know, the basic summary of the point to me seems to be like, okay, so what we're going to do is we just won't even talk about the thing that you want to be free will, and we will define this other narrow thing you're not that interested in and call that free will and say that that can exist.
Dave, but you're missing the whole point. And here's the thing, like, I don't see a Dennett as an apologist about his compatibilism stuff. And admittedly, I've not read his book about this topic.
I have, but a while ago.
Yeah, I've seen him talk on this topic. And my understanding of what he's saying, I think he presents the argument weakly. And that may be because he does not agree with my perspective on this. And here's my perspective. Earlier when I was talking about whether, you know, you could be able to tell whether the universe had free will or was deterministic, I was not saying, well, the universe is probably either deterministic or there's free will or somewhere in between. And we just will never know. No. That is an incorrect interpretation of my statements. It is meaningless. It is human structured, you know, human concepts put on something that don't make any sense for it to be put on. It is like asking if the universe is blue. Because we tend to think of objects as having color when really, well, A, it's only a reflection of light, but even aside from that, what color is my car, Dave?
It's a category error in that the universe is not an object.
Well, there's that part, but what color is my car, Dave?
Your red one or your black one?
I only have black ones, actually. Two black ones. But
the cube's
from
not
the perspective,
red? Mixed up with someone else's
red cube? Yeah, that's Sean's cube.
Okay.
Anyway.
So that's a category error also.
Category, but regardless, okay, it's black, right? I have a black car. I have two black cars. Sure. I don't have two black cars. I have a car where a lot of the bodywork is painted black, and a car where a lot of the bodywork is painted black. Neither interior is black. The engines certainly don't all... engine pieces certainly don't all correspond to some black color. We say it is black because it is a majority color, and that's our easy way to understand and differentiate between two objects, which otherwise might be the same, like Sean's cube and my cube. Now, there are a lot of differences between those two cubes, but externally, we would say, oh, that's the red one and that's the black one. Let's make it easier. But it's a human concept. It doesn't actually describe anything about the universe. It's the same with free will and determinism. You're talking about two ideas that the universe does not give a damn about. Like, it is an uncaring universe. Determinism would be what? That everything is already decided? The universe doesn't care. The universe, from our ability to view it at least, does not know what yesterday is or what tomorrow is. In fact, time itself, the universe would tell you if it were a person, which it is not. Again, a category error because I'm personifying and anthropomorphizing in a non-human entity. But it would tell you, I don't understand what you mean. Time is different over there than it is here. And very potentially, Dave, if we went further and further out into the universe, we might find places where time does not exist at all, or the laws of physics are completely different, right? So determinism would be what? The actions cause the next action in a chain of kind of how we view events. Would that be a fair description?
I think it's fair enough.
And that's meaningless. That's meaningless. It doesn't mean anything. Because the universe is in flux. Items are moving around. Objects are changing and flying around and stuff. And maybe if you could ask the universe, it would say, oh, well, that's going to go there, and that's going to go there, and that's going to go there, and that's going to go there. But why would that be determinism from the universe's perspective? If a person is making a choice, we want to believe that there is some soul or spirit that's manipulating the physics. That's the only way that free will could exist. It would either be completely random, right? Because it would just be physical things that are beyond our understanding, right? Or it would have to be some external entity that doesn't interact with the universe except to put electrons in their places to make our decisions. And that's us. That's our soul, right? That's a ridiculous. That's equally ridiculous. So I would say that, sure, from a perspective of, maybe from a perspective of pure physics, the universe seems deterministic or deterministic with random elements. And obviously the human concept of free will doesn't make any sense in that description without a supernatural, non-affected entity that would be the soul manipulating things. Obviously, I don't believe in a soul. I don't believe in the magical entity that's manipulating electrons to make our decisions. That's us, right? That's bullshit. So, does this make me despair? No. And this is where compatibilism comes in for me, from Dennett's perspective. Because when people say they want free will, when people want freedom, they actually usually want the ability to make choices without irrational consequences in society, in a world, etc. Does it matter if I choose to have a chocolate milkshake or a vanilla milkshake? Does it matter that I had a freedom in that decision? Well, certainly freedom in the sense of nobody was making a law against one or the other, right? By all accounts, I just made a choice. But is that choice based on how I'm feeling at the time? Yeah. Does that eliminate free will then? Is free will destroyed by my mood? Is free will destroyed by, like, one time I ate mushrooms, Dave. I ate fried mushrooms. I got really sick. I didn't eat fried mushrooms for a long, long time. One time I ate a Subway sandwich, and I got real sick, and it took me a while before I went back to Subway. Did that eliminate my free will to go to Subway? It didn't. I could have gone. I didn't want to. And is I didn't want to enough to destroy free will? And so you can see that the whole concept deteriorates. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, especially because you could say that, you know, especially some of the examples you were talking about, you know, you could say, you know, did that destroy free will or is that free will?
Is that free will?
I mean, there
exactly.
is kind of that Dennett view, which essentially is saying, in my opinion at least, what it's saying is metaphysical free will doesn't matter, because which makes sense for a physicalist to say.
Yeah.
Like, that makes a lot of sense. He's saying, you know, metaphysical free will isn't even the question. The thing you should be thinking about is just, you know, freedom in the world.
Right. In the freedom in the world that you exist in. And the
you
reason
know, the freedom
that becomes,
to make choices kind of in society and in the world.
The reason that becomes important is that we have decided, right or wrong, and that doesn't really matter and might change over time. I'm not really concerned about it overly, except from my current perspective. But we have decided, right or wrong, that certain things affect a person's choices such that we hold the person less responsible for their actions. And this is just the way it is. And it goes at all levels, Dave. I'm not just talking about somebody murdering somebody and blaming a Twinkie. I'm talking about, I have a friend who doesn't like chocolate stuff. Chocolate mint stuff. You've given up your free will. You're a slave to your chocolate
desires.
Mint, you know, the hatred. I accept
that's
it.
Even an interesting concept, like, because wouldn't that hatred just be an expression of will?
Yeah, is it an expression of will, or is it a chain holding her down?
I don't know.
You don't
Let's
know because it's a meaningless.
Let's read Schopenhauer and find out.
It's a meaningless.
Let's read Schopenhauer and find
it's
out.
It's a meaningless difference. There's no. You can argue around in circles. It doesn't actually get you anywhere, because what humans really want is the freedom to make decisions on their own. What they want is choice, which is a different thing from free will. And what we observe is that sometimes people do things where their choices are limited, or we can kind of say, we say, oh, you had no choice, but that's bullshit. You know, you did have a choice, but it was heavily, you were, you know, heavily influenced to do X. When drunk people do stupid stuff, do we say they lost their free will? We say they made bad choices, right? So when Dennett says, talks about compatibilism, that's to me what he's saying. He's saying you can have all that, and it doesn't, you know, we're not going to abandon the concept that you have choice. We're not saying determinism is the be all end all. So nobody should suffer consequences or that anything about the way we do things should change. But if you're a physicalist, if you don't believe in some kind of supernatural soul, it's hard for me to conceptualize how you believe in free will. As far as... I don't even know what free will is at that point, honestly. The term doesn't mean anything to me. I don't see anything that could be free will when people are that strict about what free will should be. So... yeah, that's why I continually talk about this topic as nonsense, because to me, there's just no point in discussing it.
All right. So now I think...
except I like to talk about it.
For, yeah, except you know, it's fun. Yeah, it's fun. We've had some fun here.
I enjoy talking about it, yeah, but I do fun. In the end, good I'm stuff. Like, why did I talk about this? It's nonsense. But I do have to explain why it's nonsense.
Yep. Okay, so anyhow, I think that leads into... thought to wrap this up, which we'll probably carry into the next show, because I like this as a theme. We keep on, we have shows that flow one into show the to the next.
All right, well, what's the next topic going to be then?
Is essentially something that I'm thinking about that I think is weird, kind of based off of this. And that is the fact that, you know, essentially, so obviously when we consider these sort of metaphysical concepts that people, you know, want and, you know, want to exist, you know, ontologically, you know, morally, cosmologically, whatever. You know, from kind of a physicalist perspective, you get the point, you know, you come to these points where it's like, ah, that concept is nonsense, and that, you know, bothers even, you know, you, let alone someone who's not a physicalist, it bothers you a little on a gut level, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Someone who's, you know, doesn't even subscribe to, you know, a primarily physical worldview, it will bother them on an even deeper, more intense gut level. Mm-hmm. What I wonder is, it is my theory and belief based off of just, you know, observations of people. And, you know, obviously I'm not all people. I can't speak for all people. But it's my observation and belief that, you know, people's actions on the day-to-day, you know, even morally, you know, in terms of their will and choice, are not driven off of metaphysical concerns in the slightest.
Yeah, I would
agree. Like, you know, people, I mean... I would say people's morality is generally built on, you know, what is, you know, inculcated, you know, culturally or, you know, upbringing, et cetera.
And what's convenient.
Yeah. Their choices, you know, they don't, you know, deeply consider, you know, the metaphysics of free will. They just, you know, they make a choice and do a thing.
Right.
Yet, you know, systems without those metaphysical concepts, even, you know, though people pay very little attention to them day to day, bother people intensely.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
That's my thought. We'll talk about that next time. I've already got some thoughts brewing on that, but we'll cut it short. I know you're missing your football game, so we should sign out. How's that sound, Dave?
It sounds great.
All right. Any closing thoughts?
No, I think that was it. Tease for the next episode.
I did want to tell
thinking for a week.
A little bit of a grim but funny story.
Shoot.
Came home last night. I was out. Came home. Wife says, Joe Paterno died. And I say, oh, that's odd, you know, because he just got fired and it's kind of weird, blah, blah, blah. So I sit down and, you know, move on with life. Then she goes to bed and I see Joe Paterno did not die. It was a false report. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to have to tell her that she was wrong. But then by the time I woke up, Paterno had died.
Yep.
And she was right all along.
Self-correcting inaccuracies.
So, yeah, that was a weird situation. Shame about Joe Pa. You know, I'm sure he would have loved to die being the coach. And he missed it by 2 months, 1 month. Month and a half, something like that.
On the other hand,
he missed it by like 5-10 years. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, on the other hand, he missed it by 2 months for good reasons.
That's a whole show.
That's a thing.
About how little honestly, I care about firing people who are tangentially related much, to something. But,
you know, I think we can talk about that when we know more things about that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. We'll never know more things about that, especially now that he's dead, but you know, that's all PR stuff. It's all just PR. So it's all just how things look or how you want things to look. And it doesn't take away anything bad that anybody did.
Well, nothing takes away anything bad that anyone did. That's not how the world works.
Yeah, but that's my point is like, why? I mean, firing people who are completely irresponsible makes sense. Firing people who may be irresponsible, but we're not really sure because we all, you know, we just hear a lot of like accounts of things. They just fired him because he was a figurehead. They fired him because he was the face of the program, and they wanted to just burn that face off with acid as fast as they could.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I mean, he certainly got, you know, the privileges of being the face of that program, so you know, he also gets the bullshit.
And that's a fine perspective, too.
That's like, how it happens.
I mean, it's also this same thing of, like, yeah, when you take a job that's like that, that's high profile, that's public, you take the good with the bad. You got to take the hits when the shit hits a fan, even if it's not your fault. Even if you did everything you could sometimes. That's just the nature of that, you know, being the face of stuff. That's why I'm not the face. I'm the butt.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And now that we're talking about anything tangentially related to football, it's making me want to shut this shit down and go watch some football.
You got
to
go watch your football. But we will be back. Maybe, you know, you got anything going next week? We can do next week.
I can do it.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll do it next week. So, you know, it'll be a week from whenever I publish this, so that might be a couple days, so sometime. But we'll be back with more, I'm Trying to Think. Hope you enjoyed episode 57. Feel free to write us at contact@imtryingtothink.com. Be sure to hit the share button on Facebook if you're seeing us there, because, hey, then your friends see us, then they want to listen. Then you talk to your friends about it, then you're closer with your friends. Then they win the lottery, you get some kickbacks.
We're bringing the community together as they get rich.
Yeah, bringing the community together to share their winnings. All right, say goodnight, Dave.
Good night. Pretty sure we've used this in at least some of our other Free Will
episodes. Shut up, it's always a good go-to. You always go to the Free Will by Rush.
You really just gotta hit that the nose. Right on the nose.
Yeah. It's better to give than receive in the context of this song.
I don't know.
If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
Unless you haven't. Unless stuff just happened.
That's an alternate theory.